All right, this workshop is, I'm sorry, this is a workshop speaker meeting on the topic of medication and recovery, and we have asked Kara to share her experience, strength, and hope first.
Good enough.
Hi, everybody. I'm Nag, named Kara.
Hey, Kara.
All right, everybody take a deep breath. Okay, that's for me to invite God in and speak through me so I don't lie and talk shit, and for everybody to relax a little bit to help me relax. I'm a very empathetic person, so I tend to absorb your energy, so thanks for everybody taking that deep breath. All right, so I just passed my bedtime. I am an old lady at heart, and I like to be in my bed reading my book and drinking my tea right now. However, Narcotics Anonymous saved my life, and this topic is something that I can definitely relate to. So when I was asked to do it, I wasn't surprised, but I was very surprised at the same time, because I never feel good enough. That was my motto my whole life in my head, right? I always felt way too much. My earliest memory ever was in kindergarten, and we were sitting in like a little semicircle, and we were naming the coins, pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters. My favorite was the quarters. I was getting excited because I knew the quarters were coming up, so I was getting a little loud, getting a little excited, and my teacher looked at me and said, stop yelling, Kara, stop yelling. So we got to the quarters, and I yelled quarters, and she told me, you're too loud. Calm down, go sit in the corner. And like that stayed with me, that moment. I feel like it was yesterday too. It's just like constantly telling me that I'm too much. And that's, I always was too, just felt too much. Whatever the feeling was, happy, sad, nervous, whatever you were feeling, I was feeling, it was always too much. And I didn't know how to manage it. So I'm a product of childhood trauma too. When I was 11, something really bad happened to me that said, if you love me, it's okay for you to hurt me. So I'm telling you all this to kind of like say, my brain is not my best friend. there's things that happen to me, and then there's actual things, neurotransmitters in my brain that just aren't there that are supposed to be, right? Science. So I got introduced to drugs. Alcohol was the first. And when I drank, everything became a little quieter. My brain got quieter. The voices in my head got quieter. And I felt like the real Kara was able to come out, right? So like the masks were off, whatever. Like everything was just freeing. And I ran with that very quickly. And I dated somebody who was substantially older than me, and they introduced me to opiates. And when I was introduced to opiates, I knew that I found the love of my life. I found something that equaled me out. I swore to God that I functioned better on drugs. I remember my first trip to rehab. I sat in front of my counselor. Her name, coincidentally, was also Kara. And I would have put money on it that I functioned better on drugs, on, you know, using, at that time, oh gosh, was it? Yeah, heroin. Well, yeah, it was heroin. And I promised her, I'm like, I'm not, you know, I'm just, it's not for me. Until I actually got clean. So the topic's medication recovery. I'm getting there, I promise. So mental health is where my medication is primarily, like, where my story is. My parents didn't know what to do when they found out that I was an addict or I used drugs, because I was very privileged growing up. We didn't, it was very, like, even though my mother, I watched my mother struggle with her mental health her whole life, on meds, off meds. Did you take your happy pills today, Mom? No, you didn't take your happy pills. We could tell. It was like a joke, but it wasn't a joke, because like sometimes she would be like, oh, you're better off without me. I'm going to go jump off a Bay Bridge. Mm. So I like grew up seeing that too. And I always like admired my mother, and I always wanted to be like my mother. But I didn't want that part of her, but I got it. thanks, Mom. I love her. She's the best. So yeah, mental health is a thing for me, and drugs was my solution. That's it. Thanks for letting me share. mental health medications have always been like a struggle for me, but I always like put them aside because opiates use work best. Mm-hmm. When I got clean in 2018, my clean date is November 19th, 2018. I was on mental health medications, and I stayed on them until for like 3 months, and then my insurance lapsed, and I got off of them. Not really by choice, but it happened. So now I'm like raw dog in life, but I'm like I'm actually like working a program. I have a sponsor. I'm not working steps, but like I'm building a network. I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. I have a purpose in life, right? And I managed. I really was managing pretty well until about 18 months clean. And my brain said, you want to kill yourself. Like, I woke up in the morning, I wanted to die. Talked to my sponsor, and she said, we didn't get clean to stay miserable. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to be my mother. I don't want to be on medications the rest of my life. I'm also a nurse. I have a background in nursing. So I can fix myself. I can't. So I had to really like use my recovery to get myself back on meds. Accepting the fact that I do struggle with mental health, and that's okay. Accepting the fact that I am not my mother, and that doesn't have to be my story. So I decided to seek outside help. 18 months clean, I got back on my medications, and la-di-da. I don't want to kill myself anymore. I started working step work, and my recovery really started taking off. I can tell you now, if I did not get on those medications, I would not be standing here right now today speaking to you guys, because I would have killed myself. I don't believe in coincidences. The universe is amazing, and I have an awesome connection with my higher power and the universe. And as soon as I got on meds, people started dying. My uncle, and then my best friend, and then my mom's best friend, and then my neighbor who basically raised me, and then my best friend. And like, if I didn't have that foundation of outside help, medications, and with therapy, I wouldn't be here. So my sponsor decided she was gonna move to Virginia and leave me, so she's not here. But I called her and we talked before, and she was like, did you read the literature? And I was like, I've lived the literature, Kim. And she was like, you're right. And but I'm still going to send you some stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. And she sent me some stuff. And I'm going to just read two little things. It says, with the use of any medications, we must be honest with ourselves, our healthcare team, and our sponsor about our feelings and motives. Mm-hmm. What's my motive behind this? Like, why am I on these meds? Do I need to be? Yada, yada. Recovery in general. Like, why am I going to tell that person she's not nice? What's my motive behind that? Anyways. And then the second one is, which is also one of my favorites, is in NA, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using. As members, we have no reason to judge one another, right? Or judge myself, right? Mm-hmm. So I will tell you, my journey with the medications and recovery was, I did get on them, and I was stable for a long time, and I did it the right way. I didn't cut corners. I didn't do what Kara wanted to do. I didn't do what I thought was best for me. I listened to my doctors, to my therapist, and to my sponsor, and I did it the right way, and it worked. Imagine that. And fast forward a couple years of being stable on these meds, and I got a new therapist, and I was talking to him how I didn't want to be on these meds anymore, that I really thought that I could manage my emotions and my feelings because of all the work that I've done throughout these years of in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I teach him a thing or two. Let me just tell you. I'd be like, Alex, listen. Principles before personalities. Go tell, it's so crazy how he's like, you don't need me. It's because I have Narcotics Anonymous. But so we decided as a team that I was going to come down off my medications. And I did. I trickled down a little bit, and then I stayed like that for a year. And then most recently, I tapered down a little bit more. So I'm on the lowest doses. I really feel like I'm on nothing because I've cried more in the past. When did I start it? Over the summer? 6 months than I have my entire journey in recovery. And I was numb. You know, it was time for me to come off, come down off those medications. And with the support of Narcotics Anonymous, my sponsor, my wife, we got through it together. And that's really my story. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Kara. And then the second speaker we're going to have tonight is Mitchell.
Hello.
Hi, Mitchell.
Hi, Mitchell.
Do you want to move
it? Got a step stool?
Do you want to move it over there?
Yeah, I can lower it down for you. Can you put it in front of me here? My back's hurting. I'm old.
We hate you and we cover you, baby.
Thank you. Thank you.
Enjoy the journey.
Interest in recovery.
Hi, everybody. I'm glad to be here. I'm an addict. My name is Mitch.
Hey,
man. It's really great to be here. Thank you, James, for asking me.
Good.
And Rick for recommending. For throwing my name out there. Got me back. That's all right. Love you guys. It's great to be here. It really is. It's an honor and a privilege. And sometimes I kind of enjoy this. I never did. I was always so had such bad low self-esteem. I never would even share in a meeting. I was scared to death somebody would call on me, But I don't know. Lately, I've been doing some different meditation, doing some different work, and asking to get closer to my God and my understanding. Seems to be working, But so let's see where I want to go with this. Give me a lot of extra time.
You're welcome.
I can talk. Once I start rolling, I can talk. So, real quickly, I was an abused child, physically, mentally, spiritually. My father used to beat my ass. I guess it was okay back then, Beat the shit out of me with a belt buckle, sticks, anything you could find on a regular. I used to go to school, I'd sit down in bed, and I'd be kicking holes in my wall. My father would come in and go to school with welts and stuff. Nowadays, he had been locked up. But he was a brilliant man. My mother was a wonderful, loving, loving woman. Great, beautiful heart. I have a lot of my mother's heart and less of my father's anger, resentment, fear, and violence. I was pretty violent. So, hurt people. I was labeled, quote-unquote, ADHD, well, it's hyperactive back when I was a kid. That was a while back. And they put me on medicine, They went to a psychiatrist, and they put me on medicine. And I got thrown out of every school I ever went to. I got thrown out of a lot of places all my whole life. But I really did. And haven't been thrown out of any. I tried to get thrown out of here. They wouldn't throw me out of NA, though. But I tried, believe me. So, everybody hear me okay? Okay. So, it was a very trying time. So I got thrown out of junior high school, elementary school, junior high school, and I was like 14. And they put me through a, It was like a Baltimore City school, a place called Phipps Clinic at Johns Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Now it's Meyer Building, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a psych place. And I loved it because all the people that I met there, they were all like there because they flipped out on acid and fucked up. You know, I mean, it was in the 60s, man. And they were all, you know, and I was attracted to them guys. And I really wasn't into using yet, but I was still attracted to them. Anyway, they ended up putting me on like Mellabrin, you know, all kinds of different psych meds. And as I got older, I stayed on them. And as I got older, I was on like Dexedrine and I was on Ritalin. I didn't know from that when I was using, when I was growing up. And I got busted, and my buddy and I were at a parking lot trying to. He was trying to get in this guy's car. He had got ripped off, and we got caught by the city police, and I had like Ritalin in my pocket. Now I used to like to trade the Ritalin for shit that I liked, which would get me down, because the junkies like to fire the Ritalin with heroin. I wasn't there yet. I wasn't there yet. I was 17 years old, and I was just starting to use, you know, smoking pot, hash, and tripping and all that stuff. Starting to get into bars, whatever. And so we were up at the plaza, and they got busted. And they found a little piece of wax paper with just two pills in my pocket. They went, you know, they went off on that. They put me in jail. I was so violent, so angry, and so scared, and so full of rage. The judge said, shut that kid up. Because I was screaming, making so much noise in there. Anyway, a week later, I got busted for possession and distribution of unknown dangerous substances, called hashish back then. Now they call it, you know, they called it that. And my father went over and brought me back to the house, and there was a couple of detectives waiting for me. And my mother had, she had one seizure, epilepsy. She had one seizure when she was 18. She was brilliant. She got a full scholarship to Syracuse Orangeman, Syracuse, New York College, Syracuse. And her mother wouldn't let her go because she had the seizure. So what happened was, I came home and my mother was like, what are you, you know, she wouldn't go look. The cop grabbed it from her. And then what happened was, sadly, my mother started having uncontrollable seizures, and she went into intensive care, and she almost died. And I blamed it on myself, you know, because not long after that, her mother had brain cancer and died. So I thought I did that to both of them. You know, I didn't think it consciously, but I felt that it was my fault. But so anyway, I continued to use, had a lot of unmanageability, a lot of physical unmanageability, getting thrown out of places. I'd gotten hit by a car, using so much stuff, everything. And I was in Reisterstown. I got hit by a car going about 60 as a pedestrian. And threw me like 15 feet up in the air and about 45 feet in the other lane of traffic. Threw me out of my coat, out of my tennis shoes. And I was laying there, a car, it was midnight, it was cold. My bone went right through my jacket. Actually, I'm an LPN too. It's pretty interesting, you know, we're both nurses. I was a psychotic nurse, but I did a lot of other things too. So that happened, and they put me in shock trauma, and I got flown there in a helicopter. To jump forward a little bit, what was happening was I was using that. I just couldn't stop. I used every day, in like 17 years plus, and I wasn't on any kind of other psych medications or anything. I was medicating myself, you know, just like I said, I used to trade the Ritalin and Dexedrine for shit that got me down, good things that I liked. And know why I'm thinking about my mother again. You know, it's pretty painful stuff thinking about that. Because I haven't talked about that. I talked about that the other day during a meeting. And for some reason, it's really affected me. You know, she's gone. I think about her every day. She died in 1999. I was clean for a while. I got clean. My clean date's 2/10/85. And she died in 1999. So I've been able to stay clean through my mother's death. 3 years later, my younger brother, I turned him on to everything, and he ended up dying of hepatitis C. And then 3 years later, my father died. So that's, I don't know, it's just been on my head. It's been in my head and in my heart. But we're talking about medications and recovery. I went to nursing school in 83, and I got out in 84, and that's when I got hit by a car in 81, April 26, 1981, and then I went to school, and interestingly enough, I was a nurse for a while, I wanted to find out, I was really curious, because I loved nursing, and I loved the technical aspects of nursing and things like that. But I went out and I called up University of Maryland. I said, look, I said, my name is Mitch Goldsmith, blah, blah, blah. I'd like to get my chart from my shock trauma experience. I go, okay. The first thing I read in the nursing notes was Mr. Goldsmith couldn't seem to get enough pain medication. And I was in the hallway smoking generic like 100 menthol cigarettes in a wheelchair, nodding out. And these two guys brought two chairs right up in front of me, and they sat them in front of me, and they said, I don't know what they said, but they looked at each other and go, he ain't ready. So I guess they were some type of counselor or something. I never went to treatment. I never went to detox. I got clean in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm sort of like a first nighter. I had, you know, I had a girlfriend that I caught. She was making out with some guy in a bar that I went into, and I was like banging my head literally on the wall because it was like somebody sleeping with me and treating me really nice. I was like, man, I must be special or something because, you know, I really thought that I had no self-esteem. So that happened. So I went to... I know I'm jumping around a little bit. I'm still ADHD, and that's interesting because that shit don't go away. It does not go away. And so it's hard for me to still stay focused, and I have a new way of meditating. It's really helping me a good bit. But all of a sudden, I got tired and my back hurts, so I'm going through a few things, so I'm a little bit... Anyway, I after that happened, I didn't know what to do. And I went to this lady in Baltimore County, and she said, have you ever been to Narcotics Anonymous? And I said, yeah. Well, the truth was that I had written a bunch of prescriptions. I was a cop, going to take them to the pharmacy, and I needed a ride. And this guy said, I'll give you a ride, but you have to go to an AA meeting with me. I was like, fuck that. But I said, all right, and I went. And as soon as I walked in the place, and they had donuts and cookies and shit. And they had like 100-cup coffee pot. And what happened was I walked in there, and I was so whacked out, I fell into the pot, knocked it all over the place, 100 cups of coffee, because it was just still fresh. The light had just come on. Knocked it all over the place, said, get that guy out of here. So I got thrown out of my first meeting. So I told her that, and she said, no, this is Narcotics Anonymous. I said, what's that? And I remember a friend of mine who I'd grown up with and used with, and one day he saw me, I was all whacked, and he had a whole bunch of keychains, and it was at a deli. And I said, what are they? He goes, oh, this is a place where you'd need to be, probably. I was like, nah. But I went to that, what had happened was I had I had gone there after the meeting, and after that, I went to a meeting that night. I got a pint of Jack, drank most of it, sat in the back. The only thing I heard, two people sitting up here, one guy I kind of recognized as a bouncer from someplace. He was kind of a BMF, kind of a badass. And I sat all the way in the back corner, and the only thing I heard during that whole meeting was keep coming back. That's the only thing I heard. I was at the bottom of the bottoms, even though I'd have a lot of physical unmanageability, a lot of physical bottoms, being in jail, getting hit by a car, getting thrown out of places, all these things were periods of physical unmanageability. We all know that. We all know about physical unmanageability. What happened after that was I went to a meeting the next morning, and I got my one-day key tag, and I've never looked back since. However, I did have some struggles. I got very involved in service right away. The first thing I did was clean. They got me to clean the ashtrays, and we'd smoke in the room, and did that. And then I got involved with other types of service. And I did H9 stuff, and I had a sponsor, and he's taking me to an H9 meeting on Tuesdays, and I didn't. And I liked it. I enjoyed it. And I did that. And one night, we were sitting around, and every Tuesday night we'd go, and after we'd go to Friendly's, he'd get a big thing of ice cream. And his name was Mason Day. He's deceased, I can say that his name. And he just passed away in April. And he said to me, I had 18 months clean. And he looked at me, I don't know what I had said, but he looked at me and he said, "Hey, Mitchie, when are you going to surrender?" I was like, "What? What?" And then he explained to me, "When are you going to stop trying to control life and let go and work an unconditional surrender in the first step? When are you going to do that?" I started crying like a baby. I was so hurt because I knew it was true, but I couldn't do it. I didn't have the wherewithal to be able to let go. I couldn't do it. I was just holding on. I was so scared. I was such a hurt, wounded individual. We all come in here wounded with one way or another. And I just couldn't do it. But I continued to stay involved in service. I continued to go to meetings. My first 90 days, I must have gone to well over 120, 130 meetings. I kept a ledger where I went, who spoke, where it was. And that's what I needed to do. That was my treatment. That was my detox. I was pretty toxic back then. Nevertheless, back to medications and recovery. I think as we get older, I didn't think I was going to get older when I got clean. I really didn't. I mean, it's something that didn't really even dawn on me. I just thought, it didn't even strike my mind that I was going to get older. But I did. Through this time, I stayed clean through a lot of angry. I used to throw chairs. I was angry, miserable. People wanted to stay away from me because that's what I wanted. I wanted to push people away because I didn't want to be here. But I didn't know I was doing that subconsciously. But at any rate, it got to a point, I don't know. I was always involved in service, H9 chairs, through different things, area, regional. I had a home group, and one time, these guys kept pushing me, and I had a beard. I didn't realize what was going on in here, but I had a beard, it was April 1st, and he started pushing my buttons, and I tried to kick the literature out of his hand. He went and calmly called the police, you know? And I had a lot of time clean. I'm going to admit that. I had a lot of time clean. Police came. I tried to go out the other way. They came back, and they grabbed me, and I had my hands up on the thing. And I turned and looked. They jumped on me, and like five cops beat the living shit out of me, broke my arm, kicked me in the ribs, bleeding, and it took me to the emergency room. Eventually, I went, was peeing blood the whole bit. But that was the most humiliating thing I'd ever been through in my entire life. But I was clean. But after that, I went to a psychiatrist. I didn't know what to do. That guy and my fiance at the time got me out of prison, got me out of jail. I wasn't in prison. but I had a full can of peppermint sprayed on me, and they took me for a ride, if you know what I mean. You know, long ride, because the place was down. The police station was like half a mile down the road from the meeting. And I haven't really talked about this in a meeting because it's embarrassing. But you know what? I have to be honest. I have to let you know what happened. So after that, they said, you need to get some help, man. And I don't know how much time I had clean. I kind of do, but it's not important. And I went to this guy, and I really, you know, I used to work in Spring Grove as a psychiatric nurse. So I knew quite a bit about psychiatry and quite a bit about nursing. He's a pretty smart guy. And he says he brings out the DHMH-3, or whatever it was, 4, Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. And I said, well, what's my diagnosis, man? I know I'm ADHD. He goes, yeah, you are. He goes, you're also bipolar. I said, I'm bullshit. You guys throw it around like so easily. Just like, you know, get a cup of coffee. Yeah, I mean, you know, throw it around very easily, especially with people in recovery. And he goes, well, you are. I want to try on a medication. He tried me on a medication. Instantly, my whole affect changed. I was able to like let go. I was calmer. I let go, and I continued. I was starting to able to understand and be able to work and live the steps and live the principles of this program. Well, later on down the road, I ended up having some. I had some more difficulties. I stopped taking the medication. I was getting really angry, and I found a new sponsor at the time. Another one passed away. One of the things he told me was, he goes, Mitch, I want to give you a direction. And when he chairs a meeting, he always says, I want to give everybody an assignment. I said, yeah, what's that? He goes, ask yourself, is your acceptance greater than your unmanageability? Or is your acceptance greater than someone else's unmanageability? And I was like, shh. And that really woke me up, and I was able to like feel better. And, you know, I mean, I wasn't able to let go immediately, but I was able to really understand what he was talking about as far as after being clean for a while and being able to let go unconditionally. Because I can't let go if I don't let go unconditionally in the first step, there's no way that I can do anything else than the second step, third step, all the way through 12. I have to be able to let go to be able to continue on in the process of the steps. But I love him, and he's very ill right now. And he's in Watertown, South Dakota. You know what's there? Nothing. But real quickly, the last few years, 2019, I was supposed to get a knee replacement. And I ended up with open heart surgery. A year later, COVID was here, and I ended up having to get my knee done. I had to be on narcotics at the time. And I'll just say, that's what narcotics are for. Mm-hmm. Thank God for pain medication. I'm gonna say that, you know. And it didn't mess with my head. I felt a little bit guilty sometimes because I, you know, thinking about it, but it helped. I needed it. I had to have it. And, you know, I mean, it broke me wide open, and then my knee was just terrible. And thank God for pain medication. But I was able to take myself off of it very gently and very easily. And I talked to my sponsor all this every day. Through that process, afterwards, I was just like, it was just, everything was really great. I started healing, and as I was healing, my recovery was getting better, you know. But that time, I wasn't going to a lot of meetings prior to that, and I was angry, and that's when Chester told me about that assignment, because I was so angry. and I was taking my will back. And after that, COVID came, and I had the thing on the TV, the Zoom, and I made friends on Zoom, and I made friends all over the world, and it was great. And I got very involved in that. And then I started going back to meetings, my old home group, Rick, and started hanging with Rick, started going to some more meetings. And my recovery started taking off, you know. And then last year I ended up with back surgery. It's just one thing after the other, it seems like. And recently I just had to go through kidney stones. So it's like, man, I'm thinking to myself, why, God? Why are you doing this? Am I doing it? Am I creating this in my mind so that I have to take pain meds? You know, these crazy thoughts come into my head. But no, I'm 72 years old. I've had kidney stones before. As we get older, we're all going to go through different times and different things in recovery, and may have to come a time in our lives where we have to look at ourselves and say, I believe that pain medication, even though it's a sort of an outside issue, but it is. We talk about it in recovery. We talk about it in the basic text. But it brings my anxiety down. It brings your anxiety down. It brings your blood pressure down. Relaxes you and able to promote healing. I'm not promoting pain meds by any stretch of imagination, because most of us were abusing that. And you know, but well, when I needed it, I took it, and I'm no longer on any psych meds, and my recovery is very good right now. I'm very happy, joyous, and free, comfortable. For some reason, you know, I'm tired, my back hurts, and I'm a little bit all over the place, but thank you all for letting me share. I hope I didn't go too far, and I'll keep coming back. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.